Okay, let's chant 49. Asakta buddhi sarvatra jitatma vigata spraha naishkarmya siddhim paramam sanyasyam nyadigacchati. For one who is self-controlled and attached and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. So this is a further development of naishkarmya, or freedom from reaction. And this is describing the second level of sannyas, which was described in 2.17, yastvatma ratir eva syat. Right, this verse. And also it was described in 6.3, yoga rudhasya tenaiva shama karana uchate. So now again, this point has come. The first level of sannyas is renouncing the fruits of work and the defects of the work, which is the idea, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the doer. Once a person is able to do that, then he quickly makes advancement. And then he can actually renounce the work itself. So that's described here. That's called Gyanamarg. When someone comes to that level of purity and sense control, mind control, and detachment, then he doesn't have to perform any of the prescribed duties. And it was said in that same verse in chapter 2 that kuryat navidyate, something like this. He doesn't have to perform this duties. 217, or no, I'm sorry, 219. Yes, that's right. But which verse is it?
317.
Oh, that's right, 317. Right number text, wrong number chapter. Tasya karyam na vidyate. Right, so the person is, he has no duty to perform. So Krishna mentioned it at that point in chapter 3. And he mentioned it in chapter 6. Now he's also describing it. So here's the description. Asakta buddhi. Sarvatra. So his intelligence is unattached. Unattached to the material objects, the sense objects. And jitatma, he's controlled the mind. And vigatasparha, he's without material desires, even the happiness of going to Brahmaloka. Well, why is he so detached? Because his attachment is to his self, his Atma. He's transferred his attachment to spiritual attachment, basically. So therefore, naishkarmya siddhim paramam. He attains the supreme perfection of renunciation and freedom from reaction. Sanyasenadi gacchati. So he attains the renounced order. Someone in Gyanamarg, he doesn't even bother for his bodily maintenance. He's completely detached from his body. It's like a avaduta, something on a high level. So here in this section, Krishna is going to be describing more about Gyanamarg and probably more details than he has mentioned previously. Well, the same principles are found like in chapter 6 or even in chapter 5 when he's describing the Nishkam Karma Yoga and Yogi, how he goes through the Jnana stage, the Jnanishta. So it's the same thing, actually. And actually, we see that he just finished describing the varnashram duties, and he said that one should perform one's nitya karma in varnashram dharma, and then offer that to the Lord. So either in sakam or nishkam. So he's offering this in nishkam. He comes to jnana level. So in jnana, he develops this knowledge of the self, of the atma. He's atma rati or atma triptas. He's completely self-satisfied from within. That's why he's able to be vigatāspriha, jitātma, and this asakta buddhi. He's not attracted to the sense objects anymore, because he's enlightened within, illumined within, active within. Right? That was described in chapter 5. It's the same level, actually. But from chapter 5, Krishna went right into Ashtanga Yoga, if you remember, at the end. But now he's going to talk about Jnana Marga, which is basically, because Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, they're both inactive yoga systems. Ultimately, the person's coming to Krishna. But there's three ways to come to Krishna. Through Brahmanishta, and then the karma and jnana manifest. Through Ishwara Nishta, and there's surrendering one's activities to Ishwara within the heart, the Antaryami, and then Bhagavan Nishta, and then one develops pure devotion right away. So his path is just surrendering to the sweet form of Krishna, hearing and chanting about the sweet form of Bhagavan. So there's three ways to come to bhakti, and this is like describing going through Brahmanishta. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that karma becomes defective when, due to false ego, someone considers himself the doer and desires the fruits of that activity. The first stage of sannyasa is to give up these defects and remain engaged in karma. Gradually, when the sadhana of such a sannyasi matures, he becomes firmly situated in yoga, yoga rudha, same level as the Ashtanga yogis. He may completely renounce all karma at that stage, right, when it comes to yoga rudha. What was it for the Ashtanga yogi? When can he completely give up his nishkam karma? According to the Ashtanga levels? Yeah, when it comes to jnana. So this is similar to the jnani. He attains a similar level. He's not doing pranayama and asanas and all these, but he comes to the same level of spiritualization. So that's called yoga rudha. So then, at that point, he can renounce all his karma. Now Krishna also describes that to when the bhakti yogi can do that, when he becomes very much attached to hearing and chanting my glories, my pastimes. Right? Tavad karmani, something, I forget. At that time he can give this all these things up. So this is talking about like ruchi asakti. When a person comes to asakti, he's attached to hearing about Krishna. So for a Vaishnavas in bhakti mark, then this yoga rudha is found at asakti. His mind is completely attached to Krishna. And then he doesn't have to care at all about anything about varnashram. He may still perform some varnashram duties to set an example for others, but he doesn't have to. So you can find this level in jnana, in yoga, and in bhakti. That's why all of these levels, they all have similar lakshanas or symptoms. If you study these systems, you'll see that they're basically the same. They just have different approaches. Prabhupada writes here that at the end of his purport, a sannyasi is supposed to be free from the reactions of his past activities. But a person who is in Krishna consciousness automatically attains this perfection without even accepting the so-called order of sannyas. This state of mind is called Yoga Rudha, or the perfectional stage of yoga. This is confirmed in the third chapter, Yastvatma Ratya Eva Syat. One who is satisfied in himself has no fear of any kind of reaction from his activity. Prabhupada knows very well all of these things we're talking about. It's just that he doesn't try to overburden the reader who is Westerner, mainly. And even Indian people, too. They can't be bothered with all of this different levels and Sanskrit terminology and cross-referencing different verses. It's just like a big headache. So he wrote the commentaries very simply. But you can see that he knows exactly what's happening here in the commentary. Because he's also using the commentaries of the acharyas to write his tikkas here. But he simplified it somewhat without all of the terminology. Okay, now 50. Siddhim prapto yata brahma tatapnoti nibhodame samasenaiva kunteya nishta gyanasya vyapara. O son of Kunti, learn from me how one who has achieved this perfection can attain to the supreme perfectional stage, Brahman, the stage of highest knowledge, by acting the way Ashanal Samaraj. So actually the question was raised, all right, he may be free from defects, but he has not yet achieved Brahman, so what is the use of this? So then the Lord says, now hear from me how he attains and realizes Brahman. In text 50. So you can see, nishta gyanasya yat para. This he attains his transcendence, which is called jnana nishta. Nishta, according to Amara Kosha, means completion, the end of something, or destruction of something. Prabhupada comments. The Lord describes for Arjuna how one can achieve the highest perfectional stage simply by being engaged in his occupational duty, performing that duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One attains that supreme stage of Brahman simply by renouncing the result of his work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. Right? So it seems almost contradictory. Right, someone can attain Brahman in Ganamarg by doing his work and offering it to the Supreme Lord. You got Bhagavan, you got Brahma, right? You got, but as we said, you can approach bhakti through Brahmanishta or Jnananishta. Either you can do nishkam karma and then get knowledge. And that with that knowledge, with renunciation and everything, and within that knowledge, then gradually nirgun bhakti will come. So in that case, later Krishna will give Arjuna some choice. Listen carefully, then you do whatever you like to do, right? Tatejasi tatakuru. So he's giving him some choice about which path he would like to do. So if he wants to approach through Brahmanishta, then he can consider his work nishkam karma and then come to bhakti through jnana marg. Or if he wants to surrender to the super soul, which is guyatar, more confidential, then he can do his occupational duty and offer it to the Lord in his heart. The Lord who has prompted him in his swabhava of being a kshatriya. Or he can come to the Lord through Bhagavad Nishta. He can just do bhakti and just sarvadharma and pradyaja. Forget all about jnana, nishkam karma, forget about ashtanga, about yoga, like this. So that's what Krishna is talking about at the end of the Gita. So you can see, because otherwise you think, well, this is, right, this is talking about Ganamarg, and Prabhupada says he can achieve the highest perfectional stage through his occupational duty, performing that duty for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And one attains that supreme stage of Brahman simply by renouncing the result of his work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. When someone performs bhakti, then he also comes to Brahma-bhuta, and he gets all the symptoms which are described in this, you know, asakta-buddhi, jitatma, vigata-spriha. He gets all of those. Ultimately, yoga means bhakti-yoga. And the other yogas are just steps towards bhakti. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, when ignorance subsides, jnana is gradually superseded by vijnana. When jnana is completely relinquished, Brahma will be realized. So that's the vijnana, Brahma. As we said, the jnani has to gradually renounce even his knowledge to come to Brahma-bhuta. That will come in the Brahma-bhuta shloka. Okay. 51-53. Buddhya vishuddhaya yukto dhrityatmanam niyamyacha shabdadin vishayangschakva ragadvesha vyudasyacha vivikta sivi lagvashi yata vakar manasaha jnana yoga paro nityam vairagyam samupashritaha ahamkaram balam darpam kamam krodham parigraham vimucha nilmama shanto brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Being purified by his intelligence and controlling the mind with determination, giving up the objects of sense gratification, being freed from attachment and hatred, one who lives in a secluded place, who eats little, who controls his body, mind, and power of speech, who is always in trance, and who is detached, free from false ego, false strength, false pride, lust, anger, and acceptance of material things, free from false proprietorship and peaceful, such a person is certainly elevated to the position of self-realization. So probably this is the most detailed description of Jnana Marga, Jnana Yoga. Like, you don't see anything, you know, priti or prapadyate, prema, bhava, asakti. You know, you don't see any verses or any words that have to do with love, sneha, pranaya, rag, anurag, bhav, prema, right? In these verses. Or even archan, arpan, nothing about bhakti at all. It's just all about detachment and controlling the mind and senses, becoming free from attachment and hatred. So Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, that's the bottom line. It means capable of realizing Brahman. And here, balam doesn't mean strength or ability, but it means attachment to kama, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Balam does not mean strength or ability, but it means kama. Yeah. Anyway, that's what he wrote. Yeah. Attachment to kama. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has written, after giving up false ego and material desires, they become qualified to realize Brahman. This is called cessation of ignorance. In such a state, even sattva gun becomes quieted and subdued. This alone is called renunciation of jnana. This alone is called renunciation of jnana. One cannot realize Brahman without renouncing ajnana and jnana. Jnana and ajnana. Huh? Yeah, he reaches vijnana and he gives up jnana. He realizes Brahman. But before he has to give up the jnana. Because the jnana is in sattva gun, and Brahma is nirguna. Prabhupada writes, thus, when he is completely free from false ego, he becomes non-attached to all material things, and that is the stage of self-realization of Brahman. This stage is called the Brahma-Bhuta stage. When one is free from the material conception of life, he becomes peaceful and cannot be agitated. This is described in 270. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apapravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sashantam apnoti nakama kami. A person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is always being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. So this verse is dealing with Gyanamarg. Baladeva Vidyapushan says he becomes peaceful like an ocean without waves. You can imagine such a thing. He also says, just wait till we finish then. He becomes Jnana Yoga Para and meditates on Hari. He renounces everything that is not transcendental. He gives up anything that increases bodily consciousness. He meditates on Hari. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also mentioned about thinking about Bhagavan in this verse. It's Jnana Yoga Para. Mentioned something like this. He's meditating on Bhagavan. Or he can be meditating on Bhagavan too. Now we'll look at the Bhagavatam, the Uddhava Gita 11:19:1. Oh, where's part two? You have to. Oh, God. Where's Raghavendra? Oh, can you get the other book, please? We only have part one. Part two is the main book we need. But you have to run quickly. Fly there and fly back. Because we're just sitting here waiting for you to come. Hope he doesn't fall down. Ghost. But once the ghost is gone, then the gems and the mantras and the herbs are not needed, right? And Jiva Goswami describes when the king issues weapons to the citizens for the war, but then after the war, the citizens give back the weapons, they don't need them, right? So the idea is that, let's see here, knowledge of the temporary nature of the world counteracts ignorance. And there are many scriptures that train the jiva in such knowledge. Gradually, one gives up his false identification with the material body and mind, and with those material objects that interact with the body and mind. Having realized such counteractive knowledge, one must engage in loving service to the Lord. So then he gives up those things. So the word vidya here, it's talking about knowledge acquired through philosophical analysis, mystic yoga, austerities, and renunciation. So these things also, the knowledge acquired from them and those things as a means to get the knowledge should be renounced because they have no application, any further application. When one realizes Brahman, then he gives this up. So that's confirmed by Krishna in Uddhava Gita.
Brahma bhuta prasanatma na shochati na kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param.
One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed toward every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. So there's a further description of this Brahma-Bhuta platform. Prasanna-atma. He's very joyful. And he doesn't lament or hanker for anything because he is detached from the sense objects. And sama means he has equal vision, like that of a child. Sarva bhuteshu, in all living entities, both good and bad. And mad bhaktim labhate panam. This is the important para of this verse, that he attains my transcendental bhakti. So param indicates that Krishna is saying, my bhakti is separate and better than jnana. Because para means something other than, or something separate, and also it indicates that it's superior. And because it's separate from both nishkam karma and jnana, it is keval, or pure. So here, the idea is that nitya siddha Krishna prema sadyukabonoi. Like this, that love for Krishna is eternally situated in the hearts of all living beings, even in the heart of the jnani. Or the person who's in Brahma Nishtha, he's maybe doing nishkam karma, going through the jnana stage, and like this, approaching the Lord in that way to try to get to bhakti. So, in his heart, there's love for Krishna. And although it was partially manifest in his knowledge, but it was not fully manifest, nor was it really perceivable by him or by anyone. So the bhakti was already partly active, but it was not clearly perceivable. So, but by coming to a platform of such high level of purity, then there's like nothing left. There's no modes of nature. There's no attachment to the sense objects. He's even given up his sattva gun jnana, his mode of knowledge from the mode of goodness. And he's just like a mirror. And so there's some bhakti there in the heart, and that reflects, and then he attains bhakti in this way. So the examples are like, the bhakti is there in the heart, just like the supersoul is in the heart, but you cannot perceive the supersoul so easily. But it takes some effort, some purification. As similarly, fire is situated within wood, and the fire will manifest only when there's a certain amount of heat. The wood will burst into flames. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of like a bowl of gems, a bowl of dal. Say you have like chana dal or something, ur dal, and you have one golden jewel, a gem, right? So you throw that, you know, and you grind that, put it in a grinder, and it crushes all of the dal, but the jewel remains as outstanding. So the bhakti is like this. The jewel is considered to be kind of, you know, relatively imperishable when you compare it to the dal, right? Dal or grains, chana dal or ur dal or something. So the bhakti is like this jewel. It's imperishable, and so once all the modes are gone, once the sattva gun jnana is gone, and any other things gone from the heart, then this bhakti remains. That's why Krishna says, man bhaktim labhate param, that he achieves bhakti. It kind of manifests. Otherwise, he would have said, mad bhaktim kurute param, that he makes bhakti by his, you know, efforts. But it's there, and it manifests. And Rupa Goswami says a similar thing in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavasasana navida nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam riddhi sadhyata. That the love of Krishna, bhava, is in the heart. nityasya dasya bhavasya prakatyam, it becomes manifest, ridhi sadhyata. Right? By practicing bhakti sadhana, that love in the heart is uncovered. So similarly, one can perform this and one can become purified, and that love in the heart can also be revealed. So Prabhupada writes, to the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma-Bhuta stage, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. But for the personalist or pure devotee, one has to go still further to become engaged in pure devotional service. So if one is going through this path, but his goal is to surrender to the Lord, right? So then his desire will be fulfilled. And then he'll get nirgun bhakti. He can get it through jnana marg, actually. This is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary to these verses here. He gives his own example. He says, he's just like a river cleansed of all dirty water. Next verse. So someone might ask that, what is the result of attaining bhakti to you? So Krishna answers in text 55.
Bhaktya mam avijanati yavanyaschasmi tatvataha tato mam tatvato gyatva vishyate taranantaram.
One can understand me as I am. One can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me, by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So, in this verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that there's four kinds of jnanis. So the first one is a person who feels that he will attain sayujya just through jnana marg, that he doesn't need to do any bhakti. The second jnani, he realizes he needs to do some bhakti to attain his goal of sayujya. So he does some bhakti. What exactly he does is maybe up for question, how he does it. Maybe he does some deity worship, maybe he chants the holy name. But Brahmavadis sometimes do different angas of bhakti. But the problem with this person is that he thinks that the form of the Lord is made of material energy, that is sattva gun, morti. Like Ramachandra or Krishna, like this, that they come to the world and they think that they, you know, Brahman is the supreme, ultimate form of the absolute truth, and that this is the form of Ram and Krishna are just temporary material manifestations made from sattva guna. So both of these kind of jnanis are offensive, and therefore they never achieve sayujya mukti. They simply revolve in the cycle of birth and death again and again. Then the third kind of jnani, he realizes that he needs to do some bhakti in order to attain Brahman or sayujya. And he does bhakti, and he accepts that Krishna and Ram are actually Brahman, like a manifestation of Brahman. But he considers that Brahman is a higher manifestation, or the original manifestation. Just like if any of us saw Lord Vishnu, we would immediately bow down. But at the same time, we would know that Krishna is the origin of all forms of Vishnu and Narayan, right? And we'd be more interested in meeting Krishna, just like the gopis, something like this. I mean, at least ultimately, we would be like that. So similarly, these Brahmavadis, they bow down to Krishna and Ram as manifestations of their beloved Brahman. You know? So they're not offensive, but they're just not interested in serving in Premamayi Bhakti. They just want to merge. They want Brahma Sayujya. So by the mercy of Bhakti Devi, they're allowed to merge into the Brahman, Brahma Jyoti. And then the fourth, now Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, this person is honorable or can be honored. I forget exactly the words he used, but maybe he's like, he can be glorified, he can be honored. Some credence, some validity is given to such a person. This third one. Now the fourth one is most glorious. Now he's a person that realizes he needs to do bhakti, and he accepts the Lord's form as eternal, and somehow he, by the association of some great mahatma, he gets converted, so to speak. Then he's sent on to the pure bhakti path. And he gives example of, quotes the verse, Atma Ramas Chamunayo, Nigrante Aparu Krime, Kurvate Haitakim Bhaktim, Itam Bhuta Gano Hari. Right, the Atma Ramas, they can become attracted to the qualities of Lord Hari, and then they can become devotees. That's how someone can approach Bhagavan through Gyanamarg. Because we see Sugadev did it, Kumaras did it, right, like this. That's the meaning. It means ultimately they become devotees from the platform of Brahma Marg or Jnana Marg or Brahmavadi. So I'll read a little bit from the Gita Bhushan. What happens after is explained in this verse. A person realizes me by my sarup, qualities and opulences. After that, knowing me in truth, By the potency of my devotion, one enters into me and thus becomes connected with me. One entering the city becomes united with the city and doesn't become one with the city. The cause of the realization can only be devotion. First, he realizes my qualities, opulence and opulences. Then he comes to me. Or another meaning is that he knows me by devotion and then he enters into me. Thus he performs devotional service after liberation. The Shrutis and Smritis all say this. When avidya is destroyed by devotion, one relishes bhakti even more, just as a jaundiced person who has become cured really tastes sugar candy, although he has been eating it all along. Very good example. So, The Brahmavadi, it's been the third kind. It's been mixing a little bhakti in with his gyan, right? This is bhakti mishra gyan, right? And so he's been tasting bhakti the whole time. But then at a certain point, through like meeting a Mahabhagavad or meeting the Lord or some kind of connection with devotees like this, or maybe, like fasting on Ekadashi, he gets some, bhakti umuki sukriti. Right? So then bhakti will become manifest, and then suddenly it becomes very sweet to him. Right? Itam bhuta gano hari. And he's tasting the qualities of the Lord that before, because he was jaundiced by too much jnana, he couldn't taste it, but now it comes to the point where he can actually taste it. Now, I'll read Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary here. A sadhaka attains the nature of Brahma when he becomes free from the impure designations of sattva gun, rajagun, and tamagun. This means that he attains a state of pure consciousness free from any covering. Thus he becomes prasannatma. Having achieved this state, he neither laments for what he has lost, nor hankers for what he doesn't possess. He's free from bodily misidentification. His desire for jnana becomes satiated, just like a fire that's become extinguished due to lack of fuel. He attains my imperishable bhakti in the form of shravan and kirtan. Bhakti is a function of my Srup Shakti and continues to exist even when ajnana and jnana cease, because it is separate from my Maya Shakti. Therefore, param means separate or superior to jnana. In other words, param means kevala bhakti, which is devoid of nishkam karma, jnana, etc. The word labhate means that previously bhakti was partially situated in jnana and vairagya, practiced for moksha. I'll read that again. The word labhate means that previously bhakti, which was partially situated in jnana and vairagya, being practiced for moksha, was not realized just as the supersoul situated in all beings cannot be realized easily. Therefore, labhate is used instead of kurute. A golden gem which has been mixed in with dal or grains can be retrieved even when the dal is destroyed by grinding, because the gem is more durable. In the same way, bhakti, which is partially situated in jnana and vairagya, can be achieved independently when jnana and vairagya are dispelled. So jnana and vairagya then become like something like garbage to be thrown away compared to bhakti. But in the beginning, jnana and vairagya help the person. And that's also described by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that in the beginning, jnana and vairagya can be helpful, but ultimately they should be rejected because they can make the heart hard, hard-hearted, and then you can't love Krishna, so you have to get rid of it. This is the most opportune time to attain pure prema bhakti. The result of such bhakti is never so yuja mukti. Therefore, the word param here must mean prema lakshana bhakti, or bhakti with symptoms of prema. So it's like, you know, we have the examples of the Brahma Kumaris and the four Kumaris. Atmaramas Chamunaya. So when somehow or other a Brahmavadi comes in contact either with a Mahabhagavad or with Lord Vishnu, or maybe some miraculous thing happens, he gets some contact with pure bhakti, then he's like a dry piece of paper, and there's a spark. It just bursts into flames, right? Because there's no modes, right? There's no attachments. He's just like a clean mirror. He'll just reflect whatever's put in front of him. That's why Vishnu Chakravarti says, this is the most opportune time to get pure prema bhakti. And Krishna also said in chapter 7, Tesham Gyani Nitya Yuktas Eka Bhakti Rabashishite Prihi Gyani Notyartha Mahamsa Cha Mama Priya. Right? These Gyanis are the best, because they don't have any attachment. So if they meet Krishna and then they become attracted to Krishna, it's not because they're in distress or they want money or they're a little inquisitive, right? They already have Brahma Bhuta. So we have to understand that this verse, I read the commentary to 54. Alright, so I'm sorry. But this verse, Bhaktya Mam Abhijananti, comes after the Brahma Bhuta platform. Right? So the person already has Brahma-bhuti. If he becomes attracted to the Lord, it's not for any other motive. So Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, therefore, more or less, his devotion is pure. Of course, it could, tad anantara means like afterwards, right? At the end, vishate, mam, right? He enters into me, right? After knowing me in truth, then thereafter he enters. Well, it can mean that. But here, it means that he, as Baladeva Vidyabhushan mentions, that coming into the city doesn't mean that you become one with the city. And Prabhupada gives example about the green bird entering the green tree. Prabhupada writes that becoming Brahman does not mean that one loses his identity. Devotional service is there, and as long as devotional service exists, there must be God, the devotee, and the process of devotional service. Such knowledge is never vanquished, even after liberation. Liberation involves getting free from the concept of material life. In spiritual life, the same distinction is there. The same individuality is there, but in pure Krishna consciousness. One should not mistakenly think the word vishate enters into me supports the monist theory that one becomes homogeneous with the impersonal Brahman. No. Vishate means that one can enter into the abode of the Supreme Lord in one's individuality to engage in his association and render service unto him. For instance, a green bird enters a green tree not to become one with the tree, but to enjoy the fruits of the tree. Impersonalists generally give the example of a river flowing into the ocean and merging. There may be some source of happiness for the impersonalist, but the personalist keeps his personal individuality like an aquatic in the ocean. We find so many living entities within the ocean if we go deep. Surface acquaintance with the ocean is not sufficient. One must have complete knowledge of the aquatics living in the ocean depths. That's even a better example. Huh? The categories of? Yeah, and they become pure devotees. Well, we saw that the four Kumars, they met the Lord directly. I mean, along with Garuda, Lakshmi, and Giant Vijay, who they cursed. Right, they're special. Well, when they approach the Lord, you know, it's just a matter of time sequence. They're coming to the Lord, and they don't know what to expect. Like the four Kumaras, they weren't devotees. That's why they got angry at Jai and Vijay for not letting them to come in. But then later, when they became devotees, they felt very sorry, and they were very humble, and they were apologizing like this, so that humility became manifest. So, when they're approaching the Lord, but they're approaching from that, you know, that platform of Gyani. And they're considered better because they're not motivated by any of the other motivations. Just some attraction is there, like this, something. It brings them to the Lord or to the Lord's devotees. So when they surrender, then they're better than the other three. They're like on the cusp, but they're just coming to the Lord. They're becoming devotees. When they're approaching, they're not devotees. Then they meet the Lord. Then they're changed. Then afterwards they become devotees. It's possible. It's no guarantee, but they have a very good chance because they're completely pure. These Brahmavadis are completely pure. If they come to their Siddha Brahma-Bhuta platform. So in one sense, they're the best people to preach to. But then you should be careful because then they may, you know, make you a Brahmavadi. Right? If you're not powerful enough. It says Mahabhagavat, they meet Mahabhagavat devotees, like Narada or someone like this. on this level. Yes, that's generally the understanding, because the acharyas are commenting that this can only be this higher level of bhakti by the previous word, parabhakti, in the previous verse. That can only mean keval bhakti. So that keval bhakti is only attained by that fourth jnani, who becomes a devotee, actually. Ishra Yanishtana. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, he's just offering to the Lord in his heart. And the other, it's just, he's offering it to the Lord without thinking he's in his heart, or maybe he's not meditating in such a way. That's called like, that's another way of calling, another dhyana yoga. In other words, that Ishwara Nishtha, he's meditating on the Lord in the heart. No. Well, it can be like Krishna's describing dhyana. He says ultimately, I and the Supersoul are one, right? And in chapter 15, he said, Sarvasya Chaham Riti Sadivishto, I am the Supersoul, right? I'm in the heart of all beings. So I'm that Ishwara. So, you know, people can do dhyana yoga and be meditating on Bhagavan in the heart. Like Hanuman, he opens his heart, there's Ram, not Vishnu, right? So, that's a different kind of, kind of Antaryami yoga, you know? I mean, just through Ashtanga yoga on Paramatma, one cannot achieve prema. But if one is doing this Ishvara Nishtha and he's meditating on Bhagavan in the heart, or Ishvara in the heart, right? And he's actually approaching bhakti, but in a kind of way which sounds similar to Ashtanga yoga, but it's different. That's why it's called Ishvara Nishtha. So like all of the different practices like vairagya, varnashram dharma, and meditation, the bhavas of these angas change according to the nishtha. Because people in Brahma nishtha can do them, people in Ishvara nishtha can do them, and then they change. And people in Bhagavan nishtha do them, they change again. The same thing. The Brahma body could be meditating on Brahman. Or a yogi can be meditating on the Paramatma. Or a devotee can be meditating on the Lord in his heart. So all these things are not so like cut and dry as we think, black and white. There's these angas of Dharma are interchangeable according to the shift. Therefore, it says Brahmati, Paramatmati, Bhagavan, Iti Shabyate. This is all the Supreme Absolute Truth, and depending on the person's nishtha, that he'll approach in a certain way. I can't give a full description, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was commenting in the consequent verse that. He was saying that Krishna is giving Arjuna these choices, and he can choose what he likes to do. And he says that this Ishvara Nishtha, he can meditate on the Lord, perform his occupational duties, and offer that to the Lord within his heart. And that's what Krishna is talking about later here, just in a few verses. It's not talking about a Paramatma yogi meditating on Paramatma. He's talking about the Paramatma, but he's talking about that Paramatma as himself. And that would be considered for Arjuna, who's a devotee, this Ishvara Nishtha. That's further on. It's hard. It's like, I'm preparing 10 verses. And I can't keep all every single comment in my head at the same time. Something else? Well, Krishna said that. Jnanam cha mai sanyasat. One should give up the knowledge and the means for attaining the knowledge, which means vairagya and tapasya, analytical study, sankhya, things like this. Jnana karma jnavartam. I guess so. It seems to fit this that description. I mean, it's those verses haven't been like connected by anybody. Generally, that the word jnana means monistic speculation, monistic conception of the Supreme. What's that? He has to give that up, because like the third kind of jnani has this monistic conception. So he goes to Sayuja. So that's the result of Gyan Mishra Bhakti. It's a kind of bhakti, but it's not Keval Bhakti, it's not Uttama Bhakti. So Ribhu Goswami he's very strict. His presentation of bhakti is Uttama Bhakti. Those other bhaktis, and we see that the result is much different. In which context? You give up jnana and you when you have vijnana. Here, just in what we're discussing, in talking about Brahma Bhuta, realizing Brahma, Brahman. But it can be the initial stage of realizing Bhagavan also. It's realizing that God is present everywhere. And as Prabhupada said, that's the last step for the impersonalists, but the devotees, that's like the first step. Well, for a devotee, dhyana means to meditate on Bhagavan. So for him, he's meditating on Brahman. Sattva-gun dhyan means self-realization, and he understands Brahma, Brahman. Himself as part of Brahman. Yeah. He has the realization of the Lord's, all-pervading nature. Normally we see that he comes through Ishvara Nishtha, through Ashtanga Yoga. What in this case? He can do through Nishkam Karma Yoga. Nishkam Karma Yoga is also in Brahma Nishtha. And it can be also in Ishvara Nishtha. Well, you already gave the example. But their anger was not material anger. It was because they were being stopped by Jayan Vijaya from seeing the Lord. It wasn't that they were trying to obtain something for their senses. So it's kind of spiritual anger of a Brahmavadi. Yeah, it's not ordinary anger. That's a good question. But their father, Lord Brahma, directed them. So Brahmavadi, his idea is that if he's the third kind, which it appears that they were until they attained the fourth kind, the fourth level, and that was that they thought that the Lord was spiritual, a manifestation of Brahman.